Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast, the show where we help you achieve financial freedom through real estate investing, interviewing people who are already living a life of freedom, getting the strategies and keys to their success to change your life and bring you closer to achieving financial freedom yourself. Now here's your host, Noah Evans.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Chasing Freedom Show. Today is going to be a phenomenal episode. We have the grandfather of real estate himself.
The grandfather? Can it be the uncle?
Financial freedom. Beardy Brandon with us.
I'm the grandfather now. Wow. All right. Hi, I'm the grandfather of real estate. I've been in this for 85 years. And I could tell you, back in my day, you could buy a house for $150. What's up, man? How you doing?
Good, man. I'm so excited to have you here.
I am excited. You know, I'm more than excited to be here. I'm ecstatic to be here. I am overjoyed to be here. I might cry, man. This is great.
No,
dream come true.
No sarcasm there.
None. Dream come true. Ever since the day you launched this podcast, I've been saying someday.
You kept
Noah,
reaching out, dude.
Yep. I'm like, get me on the show, man. I mean, it took me a $150,000 check to you just for this day to happen.
On.
Yep. Now
that
it
was a
happened.
Discount, by the way.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate
You're welcome.
That. Yeah. I know. I heard your last guest had to pay $400,000. So yeah. You are cranking in money
dude,
right now.
It's been fun, man.
Yeah.
To just be able to charge people whatever I want.
Yeah. It's crazy.
This platform's been amazing.
Yeah. Now I know why you're so rich and you drive that Tesla, man.
Yeah.
I get it.
I paid for it. This podcast guest, man. They're making the payments. So.
Oh, so good. Well, what do you want to talk about today?
Yeah, dude. First off, I think there's probably a lot of people that want to hear what you've been up to since you leaving the Bigger Pockets show.
Yeah.
We don't get to hear from you anymore. So
yeah.
What's your life been like?
All
what
right.
What have you been doing?
Yep. So I left the Bigger Pockets podcast back at the end of December, and I jumped on a road trip and I just traveled for like 4 months. I went to everywhere. I started in Sedona, Arizona, went all the way out to Florida, did some Disney World, went up to Atlanta, then all in like an RV or Airstream trailer, which was a really cool but horribly difficult experience. It was great. I mean, I love it. But man, like little kids, Airstream, tiny like travel, like potty breaks, the whole thing. It was fun, memories, but I'm glad I did it. Wouldn't do it again. I wouldn't like, hey, let's go another road trip. No. Jumped from Atlanta over to Europe. Did like Barcelona, Paris. Did a private jet, which was super cool, from Paris over to London. Because I was like, hey, wouldn't that be cool to try a private jet and surprise my wife?
Isn't that the one you bought?
Not the one I bought. It's the one that, the fleet that I bought, actually.
It's one part of the fleet, man.
Yeah. It was really cool. It was like $8,000 for an hour flight, which wasn't as crazy as I thought it could be, because like the flights were gonna be $1,000 for me and my family total, or for coach, and it was gonna be like $4,000 for first class. So for $8,000 to be able to do a private jet with like that whole thing,
That's so cool.
It was super cool. Yeah, just jumped over there to London, did London for a few days, went up to Scotland. And you been to Scotland?
No.
Scotland is the greatest place I've ever been. It was magical.
You probably look like you belong there.
I do. I think people were like,
did they
this
keep
guy
walking up to you and touching you.
This is true. This guy, I belong there.
They're like, he's an ancient Viking.
So that's how I got started. I mean, that's how I got the kind of killing some time for the first 4 months of the year. Scotland was amazing.
Do you feel like you came back more motivated and charged up after taking that time away to go do bigger things, become more efficient, help the team grow?
Yeah. You know what that was margin. I like to call it margin. Like, if you think of a page, a book, like the words don't go all the way to the edge.
Yeah.
So like the edge is like margin, right? And like, you don't have a wall of text either. There's margin within the paragraphs. There's margin within the words and within the sentences and all that. Right. So I'm a big believer in margin. The book, The One Thing from Gary Keller and Jay Papasan, talks a lot about there is no work-life balance. It is work-life balancing. And so like you go back and forth, you might be really heavy work for a while and then be more heavy family. So that's really what that was. It was adding margin because for a while I didn't have it. I got really busy into last year.
Yeah.
Now, while I was on this road trip for 4 months, I think we bought, $200 million worth of real estate or something crazy like that.
While on the road trip.
While on the road trip. We bought like a couple $100 million of real estate, hired, maybe 20 people. Maybe 30 people during that time. And raised, maybe $100 million during that time. Like, it was crazy 4 months that I spent most of it working maybe an hour a week. And I'm not saying that to brag, like, oh, wow, look at this.
Yeah.
But I want people to know that, like the four-hour work week, Tim Ferriss's four-hour work week idea, it can exist. There is a way to make it work. Now, that didn't happen until 15 years into being in real estate. But it's a doable thing if you have the right mindset and you approach it from the right way.
Mm-hmm. I want to break that down for a second. And this wasn't even the direction of the show that we necessarily wanted to go, but it's been super impactful.
Yeah, I know
so
you wanted
far.
Me to show my abs and to like to do some flexing, but I think this is a better angle.
Make a calendar out of a couple of cuts. Yeah. But
dude, somebody sent me a calendar the other day, a picture of a calendar, and it was like me on the front cover. It looked just like me, but it was a naked man holding a fish in front of himself.
Saw somebody Did you post that? Who posted that?
I don't know. Somebody
was
in a Facebook. It was somebody from our group, from the masterclass. Uh-huh. Like, and yeah, it was so funny. They're like, look, Brandon, I didn't know you did calendars. I'm like, I should do calendars. You were saying.
So what I wanted to break down was, I'm sure people are curious, that 1 hour a week has to be your $1 million an hour task.
Yes.
And so what does that look like? What are you spending that 1 hour doing?
Yeah. That hour is like when I was on the road trip, that hour was a meeting with the core team. We call our board at mm-hmm. Open Door Capital. Okay. So the company Open Door Capital is my real estate company. We buy mobile home parks and apartments. So the board is me, Ryan Murdoch, Brian Murray, and Walker Meadows. So Walker is my COO. Mm-hmm. So when I was gone, that was really like once a week, I'd get on a call either with the whole board or just with my COO and hit the high level questions, the high level issues. Like, hey, should we buy this apartment complex that we've been looking at? And then there's a few other times where it was like an emergency, like, quick, we need to jump on a call with this, I don't know, whatever lender. But that was, I think, maybe super rare, like maybe once or twice the whole trip. But when I established, and this is what the key here was, when I built Open Door Capital, almost everybody in the world builds a company like this. Not like the way I did it, but they build it like this. I'm a baker. I want to bake or have a bakery. So they start baking cakes all by themselves, and they're doing all of it themselves. They're doing the sales, marketing, legal, you know, bookkeeping, everything, baking, cleaning, all that. Then someday they go, and I call that kind of a DIY mindset, yeah. Right? Then they kind of like add, eventually they're like, I don't really have time for all this thing. So I'm going to just keep doing XYZ task. Usually they'll do the sales, marketing, bookkeeping, whatever, but I'm going to hire an assistant to help me bake. So I call that the project manager role. Mm-hmm. So in that role, you hire people to do little jobs that are next to you, like hire usually third party. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have this guy go do this thing. Again, nothing wrong with that, but that's usually what they do. Then eventually, if the company succeeds really well, you start hiring employees and you build a team and a culture. And you are like the CEO or the COO, however you want to look at that. You're like the chief operating officer and you're meeting with your team and you've got layers and you've got people, and that's great too. But then there's this fourth level. I call it the architect. Or maybe you could call it, like the brand, mm-hmm. or even maybe a better word is like the energy. There's like the energy of a company. Example would be Richard Branson. Okay. He owns hundreds of companies, or at least 100 companies, right? But he has the energy of those companies. He attracts talent. He attracts people. He gives the vision. But he's the energy. He's the architect that lays out, this is where we're headed. Go do it. So when I built Open Door Capital, now, I didn't start with Open Door Capital. Now, early in my real estate, yes, I started DIY and all that. But when I started this new company 3 years ago, Open Door Capital, I was like, I'm not going to move through that anymore. I'm just going to start. Like, it was kind of a theory. Can I just start as an architect from the beginning? Mm-hmm. I'm sure Richard Branson could. Like, if he wanted to start a real estate company, he wouldn't learn how to paint. He wouldn't learn how to lay carpet. He would just, like, go hire somebody and be like, hey, go build me a real estate company. That's what I did. So from the beginning, from day one at Open Door Capital, I always treated it as if I was an outside force, energy that was making the company happen. And I just hired really good people to make it happen.
I think that's interesting. So it's almost like you started with the end in mind.
Yes.
And you weren't willing to tolerate anything less.
Yeah.
Right? So do you feel like in the startup of Open Door, do you ever felt like you were being pulled back down into a role that you didn't want to be in?
Yeah, it's super easy to do that. Okay. Yeah, in fact, I joke sometimes. Like, remember those like bracelets back in the 90s, like the WWJD? Uh-huh. Yeah, so now there was like, should I smoke weed? And you're like, look at your wrist.
No.
No, because, you know, what would Jesus do? Right, so I want to get a bracelet that says WWEMD. What would Elon Musk do?
Ah,
or what would Ed Milet do, right? Like or what that. Would Richard Branson, WWRBD, right? What would Richard Branson do? Because as soon as you think that, it pulls you back. It re-elevates you back to that mindset that you want to be in, right? Because it's really easy, especially when you are like me. Like, I started DIY, I did it for a long time. So my natural state, the comfortable state, mm-hmm. is just, I'm going to figure it out. So I need that either, A, I need other people telling me, Brandon, you're being a DIYer, get back in your mindset. And so for that, I have a performance coach. The terminology he uses, and for years we've talked about this, he'll say, Brandon, is that a general or a cadet? And I'm like, oh, good question. That's a cadet. That's a cadet move, so not a general.
A cadet move would be like doing operational intensive work.
Yeah, I'm going to go in there and do it.
But a general would be the leadership aspect, higher level pointing.
Yes. What does a general do in a war, right? They're, unless the enemy is at the door, the general doesn't touch the gun.
Yep.
The general is looking over a map at the whole thing, and he's usually on, you know, on TV or doing a newspaper interview because he's the energy of the military operation, right? He's not the battle.
Yeah.
So he understands it, but he's not the one shooting the gun unless he absolutely has to. So it's very easy for me to get pulled into DIY mode. I just remind myself, what would Richard Branson do? What would Elon Musk? I have a friend named David Osborne, worth hundreds of millions of dollars, very successful guy. And I always think, what would David Osborne do? That's probably my number one. What would David do in this situation? You know, he would not pick up a pen and go start writing a whatever, right? He would find a person to go do that. Example, a couple weeks ago, we were like, we need to do some more like Facebook and Google ads for investors. We want more investors in our company. Mm-hmm. We've got 1,000 accredited investors right now. We would like to have 2,000. The more investors we have, the more money we can raise, the more money we can raise, the more deals we can buy, right? It's the only bottleneck in our business is how much we can raise.
Interesting.
Which is an interesting point. Let's try to circle back to that because that's something cool I want to talk about that I kind of realized lately. But so I'm like, we need to get more investors in our company. I'm not on the podcast anymore, Bigger Pockets, right? Because I needed to like take a break back and spend time with family and all this. So I started thinking, how do I do Facebook ads? And I immediately went to Google and I like typed in like Facebook ad course. And I like find these courses. I'm like, okay, I've done a little bit of Facebook ads in the past, but how do I do this? And I start looking and I'm like, okay, maybe I can listen to this podcast. And all of a sudden I'm just like, wait,
what am I doing?
Yeah. I'm worth like ridiculous amount of money, and I'm sitting there trying to figure out how to do Facebook ads.
Hire an expert.
Exactly. Yeah. Which, like, I could work for the next 5 years at Facebook ads and still be worse than the guy I can hire for $12.50 an hour from overseas to do my Facebook ads, right? Yep. It's like I had to, like, hit myself and be like, stop. What would Richard Branson do? What would David Osborne do? And I got in that. Let me come back because I want to make sure we hit this point. This idea of the only bottleneck is the money you can raise. And here's what I mean by that. Every single thing in real estate is mechanical and a computer could do it almost entirely. The only thing that aren't really is your network, like your networking.
Yep.
And networking / raising money. Like that's really about it. You can analyze, like someday computers will analyze deals just fine. They already do, but like you can, like that will just be outsourced to AI. But even so right now, like you can, and if you want to get more deals, analyze more properties, right? Make more offers. You will get more properties coming through. That's all mechanical. You want more leads? Spend more money on direct mail.
Yep.
Everything's mechanical. Everything you can just like push and get more results. But the only bottleneck that you really can't is you're raising money.
Yeah.
And so especially at the larger level like we are. So if I can raise $1 billion, I can buy $3 billion of real estate. If I can raise $10 billion, I can buy $30 billion. And knowing that I can raise that money, I can lay the pressure on every other piece of the team and it will just naturally, we will rise to that. So yeah, you're limited by the amount of money you can, you know, put to work.
Yeah.
Which is why I encourage everybody, if you're brand new doing your very first deal, you've never done a deal ever, start a spreadsheet right now or a CRM that gets more advanced. It's a spreadsheet. You could be a piece of paper. I don't care. Write down people's names who may someday be able to help you finance your deals and just build that list from now until the end of time. If somebody would have like told me that when I was 21, I would be so much further along today because I didn't start building any kind of list until like 2 years ago, like where I actually cared about investors. Start building that list now. And that list is your net worth. Like they say, your network is your net worth.
Can we go deeper on that? Like what does that actually
your net worth your net is worth. Your net. Yeah. Oh, like deep. Okay. Bad joke. All right.
What does that look like to systematically raise money, especially when you haven't, maybe you've done one or two deals and you've used your own money. Do you need money?
Yeah.
You need to raise other people? Yeah,
you don't need to raise money. Obviously, you can use your own money. Mm-hmm. But using other people's money is a way to leverage into much bigger deals, right? So if you want to do much bigger deals, it really helps. If you want to scale faster, using other people's money really, really helps. So if you haven't done a lot of deals, you probably need to go do some deals before you're going to use a lot of people's money. In the beginning, like that's why I encourage newbies all the time. Don't worry about profit in the beginning. Don't lose money. That's stupid. But like if you have to give up 75% of a deal to a private lender to get that first deal, right? All day long. Who cares? The point of the first deal is not to make you money. It's to make you experienced and give you a reputation and then help you see the flaws in your plan.
Yep.
So give away profit, partner with people, be a 1% owner, be a wholesaler, and just like do whatever you got to do to build the skills and the experience. The money will come later. So yeah, build that right now.
There's one thing I want to say there, that it's been a great reminder for me, even as I've scaled up. That philosophy is true at the entry level, but it's also true at every level moving up.
Yep.
No matter where you're at in 100%. Your real estate career, right? I'm doing I'm a part of a bigger deal right now. It's larger than any amount of money I've ever raised. It's more unit count than any units I've ever owned. And yet I'm a fractional owner and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
My take home from that deal doesn't matter. Yep. The knowledge, the experience, and the rooms I get to sit in are what matters.
That's exactly it. I love that you brought that point. Cause it's same when I got into mobile home parks, like my first one, like I was only like a 30% owner of it. Like I didn't care. Like I made a little bit of money from it. It doesn't matter. I could have made no money from it. So yeah, whatever you got to do to get in the room, like you said, to have those conversations and meet those people. And when it comes to raising money too, one other interesting thing I'd suggest for people is if you know that someday you want to raise money, maybe consider doing it. And I want to be careful here. There are legal ways to raise money and illegal ways to do it. So be careful. But what I've found is that raising money is this weird, like when people give you a little bit, they will give you a lot more later on, but it's that first like giving you money. So I had a buddy once asked me like, hey, I want to, you know, I got some, whatever, apartment I'm trying to buy. It's a small one. It's, I don't know, 8 units or something like that. I think I can use my own money for it. I got just enough. Should I do that? And I said, yeah, what I would actually do is go to as many friends as you can and have people put in as little as they can. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, go for width, not depth, right? Mm-hmm. So if you can get 20 people to give you $1,000, I would do that. Because once somebody gives you the $1,000, they are 10 times more likely to give you $50,000 later on. So you start building the trust with people on a small level, which is easier to sell. Hey, I'm getting 20 buddies together to buy this apartment building. Can you put in, you know, 10 grand? And most people are like, yeah, that sounds cool. 20 of us putting in 10 grand a piece. We're going to get, you know, whatever. Again, be careful on how you legally do it. But I like that idea a lot because now they are in. And before, this is what we found at Opener Capital. Before we even ever gave a person a dime back in like return, they're reinvesting with us again excitedly. Love because that. They already broke down that like barrier of, I'm not sure if I trust them. Oh, I trust them. I trust them with everything. So yeah, get them to give you money right now. Do a good job with it. Make your communication amazing. Do everything like above and beyond. Mm-hmm. And you'll have those people for life.
I love that philosophy because I've actually, my mindset has been the opposite of that. I found that the people I've raised the smallest amount of money from have been my largest headaches. They need the
I agree.
They want the most information. They want the most amount of your time.
Yes.
And then I've got people that have done hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yep.
And they don't even respond to our updates, but they're reading them. Yep. But they don't care to have communication.
Yeah. Yeah. I would not want to take money from people who don't have much money.
Yes.
But if the person who has a lot of money doesn't trust me yet, I will take $1,000 because I want that person to trust me. And the way they trust me is through the process of them giving me money, not the return.
The real relationships are built over time.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And so get it started.
You get that clock rolling.
Yeah,
is basically what you're saying, right? Start the clock now.
Yep.
I also think there's an interesting thought process. I mean, if you bet on the right people, someone might only have 50 grand today to invest.
Yep.
But they're the right entrepreneur, business owner, or whatever. Yep. They're in the right trajectory to climb in their corporate ladder. And before you know it, they've got millions of dollars to invest.
Yep.
But you invested in them early on. You believed in them. You gave them these opportunities. Who are they going to go to when they've got excess money and they don't know where to put it?
Another thing related to that, I'll tell a story. I was at an event once with a lot of like just wealthy, there's some real estate people, some others, just a lot of wealthy people in the room.
Is this church?
No, but it could have been. And so I'm at this event and there's a bunch of people hanging around and we're talking and there's this older dude there. I don't know. I hope he's not watching this, but I would guess the late 70s. And just really soft-spoken, very kind. And we're just like chatting and he was kind of a fan, a Bigger Pockets fan. And I'm like, hey, you know, took the picture with them and went back to sit with my friends and hang out with them and all that. And I just didn't think about it. Anyway, I found out later the guy's worth like, I don't know, $300 million. And I didn't, like, I don't want to say I like didn't give him the time of the day because I took pictures and I talked. But I made zero effort to build that relationship. And again, you don't build relationships because of they can give you money. But I judged opposite, right? I should assume older people have more money, but I just judged this guy for being like this old, nice guy as like, oh, he must just be like a fan of whatever, like take my picture and move on. So you never know. I guess the point I'm making is you never know, right? What people might have. So treat people equally, everyone the same. They might stumble into a lot of money later. They might have it hidden right now or just not be flashy with it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot. I know people who like their first big private lenders was their mailman, right? Or their cousin who owned a bar, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's you never know what people have.
Here's a funny, I'll follow up with another funny story on that. So I don't want to give away too much because this person's going to be a guest on my show in the future. Ooh. They're booked out already.
Elon Musk.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's about not judging people by the way they look or what their profession is, right? So this particular person's a tradesman. They have actually done some work on some of my projects. They're doing more and more work on my projects. And so you'd think, okay, the guy who's a part of the team that helps me flip the houses definitely can't be a private money lender, right?
Yeah, definitely not.
No, there's no possible way, right? Wrong. Yeah. I just found out he bought his shop. He bought a brand new 14,000 square foot facility to manufacture the product that he puts in my houses. Cash.
Oh, wow.
And then so all of a sudden I sit there, my wheels start turning. I'm like, dude, hold on. You could have got a 10% down loan. Your down payment would have been $60,000 instead of $600,000.
Yep.
You could have taken that other $540,000 and put that into syndications with Brandon, with freaking AJ. You could have invested in my flips. We could have bought properties together. Your return would have been almost infinite compared to just buying the facility cash. So now we're actually working through that process, right? That's we're going to go help him do that and then leverage his money on a deeper way.
Yeah.
But again, it started off with not judging somebody, right? Yeah. Like instead, I was curious, how can I add value to this person? How can I help? What is it that I can do that would make their life a little bit better? Well, I happen to be pretty sound with finances. Yeah. So can I help this guy improve his finances and then therefore increase his cash flow and change his lifestyle? Probably.
Yeah. You know what that reminds me of? I've been thinking about this a lot lately, this kind of concept lately. Like, let's just say this. Like, let's say you go to an event. You go to a conference, and it's a fine. You didn't really get a whole lot out of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe it didn't change your life, and you didn't learn any new tactics. You didn't hire anybody. Yeah. You didn't, right? Just fine. It's fine. You go to another conference like 2 months later. It's fine. Nothing really amazing there. And you're like, man, this conference thing, that's not like for me. You go to another one. Maybe it's not for you. And then maybe a year down the road, you go to a conference, and boom, you meet a business partner who changes your life, makes you $100 million. Were the first four conferences worthless? Or were they just, sometimes you have to do a lot of something. And so in other words, success is not usually linear. Mm-hmm. It's usually like this and boom and then boom. Mm-hmm. And you never know where that's going to hit. In the same way, let's say you're taking motivated calls from sellers, right? And somebody calls you because you're sending out direct mail. You send out thousands of letters. You're getting calls coming in and you answer the phone and they're take me off your list, moron. And you're like, oh man, that was a waste of a phone call, right? Or I made an offer on a deal and it was a waste of an offer. No, because you have to do the process because you never know where it's going to strike. Mm-hmm. And so just this idea of like, if you're kind to everyone and want to benefit everyone and help everyone, sometimes people are going to have no money. Most of the time they'll have no money and you'll help them in some other way. But every once in a while, but if you just refuse to help people, or if you refuse to go to conferences or refuse to analyze deals or make offers because most of the time they fail, then you'll never get the ones that do strike. Yeah. So I guess, just focus on that process of doing the things that you can't, like you don't always get the result you want. Just focus on that stuff over and over and over. And on average, over time, you start seeing that, wow. You know, I had a guy once say to me, he's like, every time I answer the phone, it's $250. Every time phone rings, right, it's $250. Because every 100 phone calls makes them $25,000, whatever that math works out, right? So he's like, if you're nervous about answering the phone, because you're a millennial like me and I don't want to answer the phone. He's like, just remember, every time you answer the phone, somebody's writing you a check for $250 cash, or check for $250.
Yeah.
And you're like, when you think about it that way, you realize like, that's how success is built, sequentially from things that don't make any money, and then boom, all of a sudden happens.
It's an interesting way to think about it, because you could break that down to relationships built at conferences, people you meet at coffee shops, right? So say you were able to go back and find some sort of analytical metrics, right? And you go, okay, out of every 100 people I meet, one of them ends up becoming involved in my business in some way or another. Whether it be an employee, a partner, an investor, an external team member, whatever it is, right? So out of every 100 people, then you go, okay, every single person I meet makes me $500.
Yep.
It makes networking so much easier.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Every person you meet is like a...
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a cool way of looking at it. I think of like private equity firms, right? like big ones, like the venture capitalists, right?
Yeah.
They will buy 10 companies, let's say for every 10, they know that 7 of them are going to fail. 2 are going to let's say 5 of them are going to fail. Mm-hmm. Maybe 3 of them are going to make a little bit of money. 2 or 1's going to make a lot of money. And then 1's going to go 100x.
Yeah.
Does that mean that they made a bad investment on the 5 that failed?
Numbers game.
No, it's a numbers game. Mm-hmm. It's like they know that on average, they can get a 30, 40, 50% return on their money or whatever it is based on buying the 10 of them.
Yeah.
And so it's the same concept. Yeah. Putting that thought in, instead of thinking I fail. Like I was talking to a couple the other day and they're like, oh, we just keep making offers and failing. I'm like, no, you keep making offers and winning. Like every one of them is making you money. Yeah. It's just you might not realize that money until down the road. Books are the same way, right? You read a good book. Yeah. It's like getting a paycheck.
Something I tell my sales team is that the no's are a requirement for a yes.
Yeah.
So like.
So true.
And what really matters, and I think this is why it's important to track stuff, and I'm not going to say I'm the best at tracking things, but like for the sales calls, at least the CRM tracks our calls and our no's and our yeses, our offers accepted, offers declined. Yep. We just know for a fact that every like 100 offers we make, only one's going to get accepted. Yep. But that's okay.
Yep.
We know that we have to make the offers to get to the yes. And we don't know if the yes is going to fall on the first call or the 100th call.
Yep.
But we know it's somewhere in between.
Yeah.
So it makes it a lot easier to keep going when you know it's in the sandwich. You just got to eat the whole sandwich.
And this is why it goes back to what we talked about way earlier about like just like focus on those like things that do give the results that you want. Yeah. Like these are the things, these are the mechanics. That's all mechanical. Mm-hmm. So if you want more offers, get more, you know, get more leads coming in. Yep. If you want more leads getting in, send more marketing. Like it's all mechanical. You just turn it up. So I don't really care. Like, you know, if things get hard, great. I'll just turn it up. Like it doesn't really worry me. I just turn it up if I need to turn it up. In fact, right now, like it's harder to raise money right now than it ever has been for us. And it's because a lot of people, the stock market, at least when we're recording this, is down really bad. Yeah. Like, it's down really far. So all the people that normally when the stock market 3 months ago was up, people are thinking, well, shoot, the stock market's really good. I'm going to take my money now, sell my stocks, dump it into Brandon's company.
Wish I would've done that.
Right? Yeah. Right? A lot of people did that. But now it's the opposite. Now people are going, oh, it's bottom. If I sell now, I'm like, that sucks. I'm going to wait for it to go back up. So money's harder. I would say it's probably twice as hard right now to raise money than it was 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. Like I'm raising half as much in the same amount of effort, right? Does that worry me? Not really. I just turn it up. I'm just like, okay, I guess I need, that's why I said advertising, right? I'm just going to get more investors. So if half as many investors are investing, okay, I just need twice as many investors. Hence the me looking on Facebook for, you know, how to do Facebook ads better.
Man, that's so funny. Yeah. Okay. So this is you bring up an interesting point that I want to talk about. So as far as raising money, I'll kind of preface why I'm asking this first. My primary reason for creating content is one, really just to add value. I want to help as many people as I can achieve financial freedom. That's why the show is called Chasing Freedom. But two is to raise money.
Yeah.
Because the more investors I have, the more returns I could give, the bigger projects I can do, which leads me to what my belief is, but I want you to challenge me on it. I believe that like raising money is primarily a result of who you are as an investor, as like the energy of the company or the visionary or the leader, right? So people aren't going to just invest into my deals because I found good deals. Good deals are a dime a dozen.
Yep.
My opinion is people invest into our deals because they trust Brandon or because they trust Noah.
Yeah.
But that brings up, I mean, that's just like an interesting thing. Like if you're starting off or if you haven't done a big deal yet or haven't raised money for it, how do you do that? Like you don't have a reputation.
Correct. Yeah. And you know, like I once had an investor on that note. I had an investor once tell me the reason he invested in Open Door Capital is because of how I talk about my wife online.
Love that,
right? It's a cool compliment, right?
Love
but it, like the real value is like he sees me talk about my wife. He sees how I treat my kids. He sees that I, you know, do this activity and I play music in a band. And like he sees those things and says, I like that guy. I therefore am going to work with them because I can trust that he's not going to go steal my money. I saw an ad today on Facebook actually for like a self-storage company. I never heard of it. It was just a picture of a self-storage unit and it said like, invest in this self-storage,
something
15%.
Weird, like Cedar Creek Wealth or
something. Yeah, yes. Nothing. This is AJ Osborne going, hey, look at this. Yeah, like I just, and I looked at it and I was like, why would I ever like invest in, I don't know who that is.
Who is that?
Who is that? I don't care if they're telling me it's 100% return on my money. I don't know who that is.
You need to trust them.
I don't trust them because it's a picture of a self-storage unit. Now, if there was a guy, and if let's say it was AJ's face, and he was like, hey, this is my, you know, whatever, self-storage unit, and I'm AJ. I've been doing this for 15 years, and these are my kids, and my wife. This is what we do. This is my dog. I'm like, oh, I like this guy. And people will invest based on how much they like you. There's obviously they want to trust you, but if they know who you are, if they like you, and if they trust you, get those three things, and you can get people. Now, if you're just starting, again, you don't have that. So you either, A, you need to develop it over time, which, again, build your list now, start communicating.
The wide net,
how you do anything is how you do everything. You know, approach it that way, knowing that you're basically digging your well now, knowing you're going to be thirsty later. Mm-hmm. So dig your well before you're thirsty. But then also, you can borrow somebody else's credibility, too. Like, let's say you want to raise money for a deal. You want to go Grant Cardone 10X yourself right now. So you're like, I'm going to go buy a 50 unit. I just got started last week, but I'm going to buy a 50 unit. Terrible idea most of the time. However, the one exception is if you came to me and said, Brandon, I'm going to buy a 50 unit. I'm going to give you 80% of it. I will find the deal. I will underwrite it. I will deal with the bank. I'm going to raise the money. I'm going to do everything. I just need to borrow your reputation so we do it together. And you got to make sure I'm not screwing anything up. Would I take somebody up on that deal? Yes. Like, if, especially if it was in my buy box, like in my world, right? I'm not going to go do it on a single family house. It's not worth my time.
Right, right.
But somebody brings me a deal and they found the deal and they raised the money and they want to give me 80%. Why would I ever turn that down, right? So they would be able to borrow my expertise and I would be able to make sure they're not screwing up too bad. And that is the only hack that I know to go from zero to 50 or 100 right away. It's just, you're going to have to borrow reputation.
Yeah. And the numbers are flexible. I don't want people to get stuck
on
the
exactly.
idea that it has
yeah.
to be 80%. Yep. And it doesn't need to be a Brandon Turner.
It doesn't. Exactly. In fact, it probably shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Yeah. The grandfather of real estate. Hey, everyone.
Yeah. I think that's a...
Where's my Benamusel?
I think that's an interesting concept because it's like, okay, you could even just find the high-level performing individual in your local market
mm-hmm.
that you already know performs
yeah.
and bring them the deal.
Yeah.
You could even say, hey, you can have as much of the deal as you want. Let's run it through your systems and everything like
yeah.
that. You tell me how I can add value in it. You want me to raise
yep.
the money? I'll go raise the money. You
yeah.
want me to manage the GCs? I'll go manage the GCs.
Yep.
I just want to be a part of this process.
Yeah. And as long as you remember, it doesn't matter like what you get. You get 0%. I don't care.
Doesn't
just
matter.
Get into their world.
Yeah.
Because the thing that mentors or the big investors don't want to hear is like you showing up at their door and be like, teach me everything you know. Can I pick your brain over coffee? Like, what? Like, bring me some value. In fact, one thing I would suggest to people is like right now, the biggest value somebody could bring to me is either A, you know, bring me some investors because I could use more investors just like you could, right? Investors are always good, but I need a babysitter. So what I mean by that is like sometimes the value you can bring to a mentor's life is not related to real estate. It's related to their personal life.
Interesting.
Right? So if it means they have like another hassle in my life, a pain point, is I have like 5 cars. And I feel like every like week, I don't know,
hard
it's not.
Problem, dude.
I know, yeah. I have like 5 cars, right? And like every week I have a new message in the mail saying like, you forgot to renew your tabs on your truck or whatever. I'm like, I just did that. And I was like, no, I must have done it for that car. Just a hassle. And I'm not asking somebody to do this because I got an assistant working on it, but it's an example, right? Of like organize my car tabs and make sure I never get that message again and that it's just paid automatically. Like that is a real problem I have. And now the only way you know that is by talking with people. But if you went to sit at lunch with somebody or you try to find a way to provide value somehow, it may be in a personal way and not in a professional way, and that's okay. You can babysit their kids and you will learn a ton because now you're in their world. So just some encouragement is that if you can't provide value in their real estate, maybe there's another way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree completely. I think that that's a... It's funny, when I think back to like one of my very first mentors, I got him through my very first wholesale deal. I was trying to sell it. He didn't end up being a buyer, but we really connected. And one of the ways that I served him, and it was related to his business, but kind of not really, was that every single time I went to a meetup, I'd get like 3 or 4 people that wanted to invest up in the Seattle area. And I'd tell them all to call him.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, whether you want to be a part of his deals or not, or you just want to buy something up there, he wholesales stuff all the time. I'm like, call this guy.
Yeah.
And his phone would just ring all every single weekend, every single time I showed up to one of those meetups, his phone would ring from people that I told to call him. I didn't get anything for it.
Yep.
But then he became my mentor.
Yeah.
He was willing to invest in me because I invested my time into him.
Kind
of related, but not really, right? So
yeah, very much so.
One of the questions I want to pivot this show to is, I feel like you probably have access to information and data from running the Bigger Pockets podcast for so long. What stops people from actually taking off either from 0 to 1, right? Mm-hmm. Like not doing anything in real estate to actually being successful in real estate, or from being like an entry-level investor doing a couple projects a year to actually really scaling up. What are some of the reasons you see that people can't get over the hump? They can't get to the next level.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people, they struggle getting started with anything in any business, whether real estate like I do or something different. They really struggle with this idea of like they don't have momentum, right? So they got to get started, but they're not good with that yet. So what do they do? What they're doing usually is waiting for something magical to happen. Like I'm just waiting for the motivation to show up. I'm waiting for a mentor to help me. I'm waiting for just that magical moment. I just don't know why I can't just take action. I know what I want. And they might have a strong why, they have a strong reason for getting there, but they just can't seem to do it. And I like to remind people that like success is not a surprise. It's just little stuff. Mm-hmm. Like it really is little stuff.
Predictable.
It's very predictable. So it kind of goes again, what we said earlier, goes back to that stuff a little bit of like, if you're brand new to anything, like what are the things? There's 2 questions actually. Yeah, let's go with this. 2 questions that everyone should ask themselves. Mm-hmm. Number one, what are the things or the thing that if I did it every single day for 6 months straight would give me the result? Right? This could be for anything. Let's say you want 6-pack, right? What is the thing if you did it every single day you'd get for 6 months straight? If it's real estate, you're starting a business, you have a bakery, whatever. What's the thing that if you did every day for 6 months straight, you would get the result? You'd be shocked if you didn't. And then the second question is, who is going to do that task for you? Mm. Now, that's not always the case. Actually, true story. I'm sitting talking to Nate Robbins, one of our good buddies, at this pool yesterday. We were at this hotel sitting at this pool. And I asked my question. Same thing. I said, Nate, I got two questions for you. What's the thing that if you did every day for 6 months straight, that you'd get the results that you wanted? And the guy sitting next to us yells out, sex. True story. And I said, okay, question two, who's going to do it for you? And the guy, it was great. It was a great moment. But I like those questions, right? Because now you can't always get part two, right?
Right.
You can't outsource your six pack abs. It's not going to work. You can't outsource your dates with your wife. But for business, most of the time, we entrepreneurs are terrible at just doing the boring tasks that needs to get done. So that's why I like the first question is, hypothetically, if you did the same exact, like one thing every day for 6 months, what is that thing that you'd be shocked if you didn't get the results?
Can we make that tangible?
What? Sure.
Let's relate it to mobile home parks.
Sure. All right.
Okay. You don't have a mobile home park. You want to buy one.
Great.
What do you need to do every single day
sure. To
buy your first mobile home park?
All right. So let's say if every day for 6 months straight, you called one mobile home park owner. If you did that for 6 months and called a mobile home park owner every single day. Now, there's a couple of things related. How do you get their phone number? That's a solvable problem, right? How do you get that list? Total solvable problem. All those are solvable, right? Mm-hmm. But let's say you just, every day for 6 months, you called a mobile home park owner and wanted to talk with them.
Yep.
Would you get a deal?
Yeah.
Almost for sure. That's 180 of or whatever, right?
Absolutely.
Like, you're probably going to get a deal. If not, I'd be surprised. Now, if you did it for a year, would you get a deal? Yeah, I think most people, because you're getting better every time you talk to them too, right? So most likely. But the truth is, I will not call somebody 6 months straight. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Because I'm an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs are not built that way. That's why we're entrepreneurs,
yep.
right? Who, if it's not entrepreneurs, who does boring tasks every single day? Everyone else, employees. That's why that's what the very purpose of an employee is to do the boring, repetitive daily tasks that the entrepreneur doesn't want to do. That's all they are. So like, and I don't mean that in a diminutive way. I do them too. I have things that I do all the time, like for BiggerPockets. Like, I mean, good example, right? BiggerPockets. I wrote blog posts in the beginning every single day for Josh Dorkin for a long time. Why do you think BiggerPockets is so good at SEO? We have hundreds of posts in the world that point back to BiggerPockets. I did a podcast every single week for 9.5 years in a row without missing 1 week. Because I was an employee. I mean, yes, I own part of BiggerPockets as equity, but like, I still got a paycheck, and people with paychecks do the boring tasks every single day.
Yep.
So if every single day you called somebody and talked to them, you'd probably get a deal, but you won't do it. I won't do it. We just both know that. Let's accept our weaknesses that we're not good at doing boring, repetitive things. Let's pay someone else to do that boring, repetitive thing. If you don't have the money for it, there's other ways to pay. There's equity, there's whatever, but just getting somebody to do the boring, repetitive tasks just gets done. So, yeah.
Let's break that down a little bit further. Okay, so you don't have the money to pay somebody to do that task for you.
Yep.
Talked about equity. What does that look like? How do we structure that? How do we make that offer?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to do it. So, for example, you could tell somebody, hey, I want you to call every single day. Because, again, a lot of people have the W-2 mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're not making a W-2, they just want to be told what to do. They're like, they're excited, they're young, they're like, oh, I want you to call, here's a list, I got you this list, I want you to call every single day one of these people. That's it, one a day. Or you could do two a day. If you're going to hire someone else, the great thing too is like you may do more than what you would do, right? Call three a day, whatever. And here's your script, here's what I want you to do. And if you get a deal, I'm going to give you 10 grand, like just 10 grand cash. You can combine things, you can say, hey, if you get a deal, I'm going to give you 10% of the deal. Of that deal, whatever we make on it, you're going to get 10%. You have no downside, only upside. But you got to be able to do this for 6 months straight. Now, you as a leader have to find ways to make sure that person doesn't give up either after 2 months or a month or 6 weeks.
And help them be successful.
Help them be successful. Listen to them. Listen on their phone call. Like, be a leader. Like do a good job of being a leader and help them be successful. But what's great then is that while they're calling, most of the time, you can sit at the beach. And it's really great. It's like magical. It's like, oh my gosh. It actually works. So when I built Open Door Capital, again, like I built it from that like architect standpoint. So I hired like a COO to run the whole thing in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan started and now he's like on the board and now Walker is. And so like I hired somebody who does the boring, repetitive task of analyzing deals. That's what they do every day. They analyze multiple deals and make offers. Somebody else that does the boring task of calling wholesalers and mortgage brokers every single day. And by the way, some things are maybe not daily, could be weekly, but mm-hmm. just the point of having a rhythm, right? Having a boring rhythm. Somebody else talks to investors every single day on the phone, every single day. Somebody else is adding to their list, their marketing person, building our list every single day. So there's probably like 50 tasks that have to be done either every day or every week or whatever. And I just like defined what those were. And honestly, I didn't even define them. I just like had hired somebody else and they defined them, and people define their own roles, which is a magic in itself. Is if I tell someone go make a phone call every day for 6 months, they'll probably do it. If I ask them, hey, how do you think we could, if I ask them, what's a thing that you could do every single day for the next 6 months that probably gave you the results you wanted? And they'd be like, I don't know. I guess I could like go on Zillow. And you're like, all right, that's not a bad idea. Going on Zillow every day. I think that's a great idea. You want to make that a goal for yourself? Every day go on Zillow for 5 minutes? Yeah, okay. Great. Let's write that down. We're going to do that. Let's track it on a regular basis. What else could you do? I mean, if I had numbers, I could probably make a phone call. Every day you can make a phone call? Yeah, I could do that. Okay, great. I think that's a great goal. Why don't we write that down too? Now, what we did is as a leader, we just helped that person come up with their own system.
You empowered them.
It empowered them to make their own decision. Now, they got to where you wanted probably anyway, but what if instead, this is the other thing cool about once you get the right people in those roles, one, the phone call fires them up because you brought somebody in who actually loves the phone. Right? Like my mother-in-law loves the phone. Mike Williams, my investor relations guy, loves the phone. I hate it. He builds energy from it. So not only are they taking ownership of it, they love it actually. They're like, this is great. Give me more phone calls. Yeah, I'm going to make five a day. Yep. Yeah, give me more.
Uh-huh.
And I love that. And then you as a leader, you start seeing people come into their soul work. Like it's like the work they were designed to do. And so then you get a bunch of people doing their soul work, the work they were designed to do.
Yeah.
And it's magic. It is magic how watching your company go while you work a few hours a week because you've got the right people in the right place and you are a true leader that can manage that. And they do their own. They figure out their own system. And here, last point, your employee who came up with the Zillow idea and the other thing, one day he goes, you know what else we could probably do? I wonder if we could hire a Google and Facebook ads expert to specifically target, right? Like they let them come up with that idea. Yeah. Now it's not me, right? Let them do it. And they're going to come up with even better ideas. So I'm not the one trying to figure it out. They're going to figure it out on their own without me even saying anything. And now I'm not doing Facebook ads. They are. And it's just empowering and it's magical and everyone should do it.
How much freedom do you give them to go try out those things and fail on their own and fail forward and figure it out before you step in and say, I don't actually think we should do that. What else can we do?
Yeah, good question.
I mean, where's the stop? Where's the
quite
line?
A bit. I give them quite a bit of freedom.
Uh-huh.
But I give them freedom. I give everyone freedom and myself freedom within a system. So we operate in a thing called EOS.
Okay.
It's the Entrepreneur Operating System. It's just a way of doing business and organizing, right? It comes from the book Traction by Gino Wickman. Mm-hmm. So we operate very, very rigidly on the EOS system, and I love it. I don't get paid for saying that. I just love it. So within EOS, you have things like we have our 10-year vision. We're going to buy $10 billion of real estate in the next 10 years. That's where we're headed. In that, we now have we break down to a 3-year goal where we're headed in 3 years. We then have an annual goal that we decide every single year. The annual lines up to the 3-year, 3 to the 10, right? This all makes sense. The annual goal now also breaks down to a quarterly goal. So the quarterly goal now, everybody in the company has their own quarterly goal that lines up with the company quarterly goal, which lines up with the annual company goal. Yep. So now we're lined again. So let's say the goal is, again, we're going 10 million. Let's say it's 10 billion, 3 billion is the 3-year goal, whatever, 2 billion. The end of the year, we want to own, $500 million worth of real estate. Therefore, the end of the quarter is we need to at least get 100 million of apartments under contract. Let's say that's just our company goal. Yep. By the end of this quarter, we're going to have 100 million apartments. So now, let's say acquisitions guy, that's an easy one, right? He has to come up with his own, he determines his individual goal for the quarter, but I determined the company goal, essentially, or we determine the company goal as a board. So now that person comes up with the idea. They're like, I think the good idea would be to get one of those billboard signs that goes on your body and then a sign you wave around at the street corner. And we could go to the street corner and we could, advertise for mobile home parks on the street corner. And I'd be like, oh, interesting. You're a moron and slap them, right? That's what I could do. And that's you're fired. A lot of leaders will do, that's how they react. Mm-hmm. But instead, I just simply ask questions. Like I just ask questions. Never push my opinion. And it's not like you really think that's a good idea. Not that kind of question. Yeah. I'll say, okay, yeah. How many leads you think you'll get that way? I don't know. I think I can get a lot. Well, let's break that down. Like how many people are driving by every day? Mm-hmm. Well, like 12. I'm like, out of 12 people, what would you guess the number of people that would see that sign and want to call you? Well, maybe like one. Okay. So like one person a day is going to maybe call you. That's what you're guessing. Oh, yeah, I guess so. And you what's our odd of getting an offer accepted? 1 out of 100? Yeah. So, how many offers is that accepted over the next quarter? Yeah, and all of a sudden they're like, yeah, that doesn't work. Yeah. Like, and then they're like, no, you know, that doesn't work. I think we'll do something else. I'm like, yeah, I think you're right. Right. So I might know the answer. Now, the great thing about the question thing is they might say, they might give me an answer that I didn't think of, because we think we're so smart, right? We're not. Like, they're the one that the expert.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Like, they are the ones I hired because they're good at that. So he's like, no, the reason the sign thing works is because actually because Jeff Bezos lives in my neighborhood. And if I stood out there with a sign every day, like I think in it, the sign said, Jeff Bezos, I want to have your baby. Maybe he would stop and talk to me. I'm like, oh, that's actually a pretty good idea. Yeah. Let's give it a try.
Yeah.
Right. So like by asking questions versus pushing, you might get the way you want.
We also give them the chance to be heard.
Yes.
Right? And feel important.
Yes.
And I feel like above all, like human hierarchy needs, the desire to feel important is probably the most.
Yeah.
Or it's at the top of the list.
You
want to
be valued and be important and be heard. Yeah, it's so important. Rather than, I mean, think of the difference between that whole scenario and I want you to make a call every single day. Go do it. They're like, oh, my boss says I got to make a call every day. Like, it's just different, right? It's a different vibe.
Yeah, it totally is.
Yeah, and the other way breeds loyalty. It breeds excitement. And when they hit their goals, you publicly talk about it. You tell everybody how awesome they are because they're awesome. And, like, they should be rewarded for being awesome. And you pay them ridiculously well for being awesome.
I love that, dude. Well, cool. We're running out of time here. We have some questions that we'd like to ask at the end of the show. And it just kind of hopefully inspires other people to take some action, get after it, right? So the first one is, what is your definition of chasing freedom?
Oh, definition of chasing freedom. I think it's like this idea. First of all, I think anybody who's able to achieve financial freedom never will obtain, will never take financial freedom, right? So the chase is never ending. You can't, it's like...
Goalpost is always moving.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's always moving. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think a lot of us, you and I, I'm sure, and many other people find joy in the chase, right? In Maui, where I live in Maui, did you ever do the Road to Hana?
No, we didn't. Okay. We didn't get time to do it.
All right, so the Road to Hana is this great road that goes to the other side of the island. It's only 51 miles away from where, like, town is, from the main town. It's 51 miles away, but it takes 4 hours to get there. And so the other, a year ago-ish, I was going to say the other day, but, you know, a year ago or so, I'm going with a certain friend of mine whose name shall not be mentioned. We'll just call her Investor Girl Brit, and she's there on the island with somebody else, and they I'm like, we're leaving at the same time, and I'm like, all right, let's go to do the Road to Hana. And so she's in her car and I'm in my car, and we start going, and we pull over this beach, and we're looking at these turtles, and there's like 50 turtles on the beach, and we're there for like, I don't know, a half hour, 45 minutes, and then she calls me, she's like, all right, we're in Hana now, what? And I was like, no, there's nothing in Hana. The point of the Road to Hana is the Road to Hana. Like, the point is the road. It's the drive. It's stopping. It's something. And like, she just went right there, right? And so I still make fun of her to this day about hitting Hana in record, in world record time. Nobody on earth has ever gotten Hana as fast as she and her, whoever she was with, got to Hana. And
I'm going to tease her about this.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, she got the, yeah, when next time you see her, you'd be like, yeah, I heard you got to Hana in 45 minutes. Yeah, it was, there's no chance. Like, anyway, the point is chasing freedom. Hana might be freedom, but they're like, I'm not trying to get $1 million. I'm trying to enjoy the thing. So that's a long answer to a short question. Chasing freedom is the road to Hana. Look for the turtles and jump off some waterfalls.
Well, I'm sure you've hit like, you've hit your metrics like time and time again. You're a performer, right? You've hit your goals. Hitting the goal never feels as good as overcoming the obstacles along the path.
I agree.
Right? Like when you have to like dig deep and like you feel like you want to quit and you're tired and you're exhausted and you're, I've had days where I feel like I want to puke with money on the line and how am I going to fix this deal? Yeah. How am I going to keep this together? And it's never the day it closes and the money hits my account that I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I did that. It's like reflecting at the end and being like, wow, look how much I've changed in that process.
Yeah.
And I'm going to implement some stuff that's going to make me better on my future deals. That's what makes the whole thing worth it.
100%. Yeah. It's all about that climb. And then when you get to Hana sometimes, but here's what's cool too, is like you can get like level one financial freedom, right? And that's great. Like I quit my job. Great. Now you get to have some real fun, right? And then you get to go level two financial freedom. That's when you buy, you know, like a jet, right? Mm-hmm. Level two is like you bought a jet. And then you're like, now you could, at that point, you maybe never get there. That's fine. You may decide to do some charity first, or you buy the jet, right? And then level three is like you buy the jets, right? So like you just like, you can just keep going if you want to, because it's all fun. It's a fun chase. It's so fun. And when you're fired up by it, it's just fun. It's great. It's an adventure. And real estate's cool too, because we're doing it with each other.
Yeah.
Like we're having fun together. It's
very
collaborative.
Like, we're such a rare industry in the fact that like, if I help you, it doesn't take away from me at all. It actually makes me, it makes me bigger.
Yeah.
It makes me better.
Yep.
Right. And the same thing, you help me, you're bigger because of it.
Yes.
So,
well, I'm bigger because I'm an awkward giant, but
well, yeah. I mean, you're in a different atmosphere. That's for sure. So Your beard like crushes the top.
Yes, I know. I think, yeah, it would probably just like, it's great.
So, okay, the other two questions are pretty standard, but I would love to hear, are you reading any books that, or have you read any books recently that have been impactful to growing your business or making you a better business owner, operator, entrepreneur?
Yeah, sure. There is a book I read recently. It doesn't really apply to a lot of real estate people, but there are some specifics why it does. It's called $100 Million Offers, $100 Million Offers by Alex Hormozi, right? I don't even know if I'm saying his name right, but that book was legit in terms of like if you want to sell high ticket items. The reason I think it does apply to any entrepreneur is he makes this really valuable point that if you are somebody who says, let's say to you like, hey, I'm a consultant, I help business owners. You're like, great. Like, okay, fine. Maybe you hire me, but I'm probably worth like $100 an hour at most, right? But if I'm like, hey, I am a consultant who helps real estate investors who have podcasts reach more people to get their private lenders so that they can fund more deals. And Here's examples of how I've helped four other people just like you in the past. And I'm charging you $50,000 for it. You would pay me $50,000 for that, right?
Because, hey, can you remind me to write a check for this?
Yes, 50 grand, please. Because I got so specific. Now, the same is in regard to like real estate investing. Like maybe you're not going to have be a consultant or a course creator or whatever, but I translate that to being, what can you be so good at that you can find those hidden things at work? The reason we are so good at mobile home parks is because we are so focused on mobile home parks. Like that's what we do primarily is mobile home parks. We do apartments as well, but we have a partner who does those and they're so good at that niche. But we do the mobile home park thing in a certain size, 100 units and greater, in a certain location, with a certain demographic, with a certain occupancy level, and that has some weird things to it. Like we love hairy deals, we like to say.
I like the hairy deals
because nobody else does. So we got good at one piece of hairy deals, like one type of a hairy deal, which are like half empty parks. And we're like, we're going to make that our hairy thing. We're going to get good at the hair. And when you become good at the hair and very specifically good at the hair, now we can target those deals. We can see what works and we can get deals where nobody else does because we're good at the hair. And so I translate that same concept as the riches are in the niches. So niche down, get really good at the hair, and then you can broaden from there if you need to.
I love that, man. This is my favorite question. I like to save this one for last. If you lost everything, you get to keep your knowledge. You get to keep your family. I always have to preface that because sometimes people freak out, right? Yeah. So you lose your company.
Okay.
You lose your fame.
Yep.
You're probably done. You're not going to do anything else.
Done. Okay, done.
We're done. That was the episode. All right, cool. No, but you have to restart. But you get to keep your knowledge.
Okay.
How are you going to rebuild? What are you going to do? What are you going to do to get back to where you are now?
All right, so step one, I need to get level one financial freedom, right? That's allows me to take more risks with bigger things. So first thing I need to do is I need to make $4,000 a month in cash flow. So how do I do that? Honestly, I'd probably choose, knowing that I don't have the network and I couldn't really raise money quite yet, probably unless I, again, partnered and did that cheat thing. But I'll just say that. I'd probably buy vacation rentals. I'd probably go research the best place to get a weird vacation rental, find some hairy vacation rental area that I can become really good at it. And I'd probably go do, what's it called? Airbnb arbitrage.
Yeah.
I'd probably just arbitrage if I had no money at all.
Yeah.
And I'd just go rent some properties and then re-rent them out to Airbnb. And I'd probably be able to get the $4,000 a month in cash flow within like 6 months.
Do it off one or two properties.
Probably off of just, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I got some properties in Maui right now. I got two condos that are like $7,000 a month in profit each. It's just crazy. Like just crazy. Not an arbitrage, like, but
it's, you own them. Yeah.
And I own, but like they're phenomenal investments.
Yeah.
But the reason they're phenomenal is because normally people have to pay $5,000 each just for management. That's because like high management costs in vacation areas like that. But I don't know. I just have an assistant who helps manage the whole thing. And so like, yeah, that's what I'd probably do is get that cash flow going. At that point, I would find another thing, whether it's mobile home parks or apartments, I don't really care, to get really, 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 really good at. And I would just build a team and inspire those people to go out and do cool stuff with it.
And the crazy thing is you're not just oversimplifying it to oversimplify it. It's really that simple.
It really is that simple. I'm like, I tell people this all the time. Like it's so simple. I'll tell one quick story. I had a guy once tell me, back when I worked at Bigger Pockets and we were meeting with the board of directors from the private equity firm that was involved. And we're like, this is what we have, this many developers and we can do this much. We have this much money in the bank, we can do this. We have, you know, this marketing team, so we think we can do this. And he finally just gets frustrated. He holds up his hand and nicely says, and this guy's like legit business owner, like entrepreneur, been around for 50 years doing this. Like he's forgotten more than I'll ever know, right? And he holds up his hand. He's like, guys, stop telling me what you have and what you can do with it. He's like, just stop telling me. Tell me what's possible. Tell me a thing that you want to fight for, a goal you want to go for, and then just tell me the team you need to get there. We'll just give it to you. And I was like, wait, it can't be that easy. It can't be that easy. And so I was like, instead of thinking bigger pockets, I thought, how do I do that to real estate? And that's what made me go $50 million of real estate. Within a week, I was like $50 million of real estate. To do that, I would need an acquisitions person, an investor relations person, a finance person, like, I don't know, an underwriter and an assistant. Mm-hmm. Like, and like maybe like a somebody that I can manage the whole thing, or I can hire a COO. Anyway, it was like five or six people. I'm like, okay, if I had those five or six people and each one was amazing at the thing that they do, they're amazing at it. They get their soul work, right? Like, it's like, duh. If each one was doing their amazing thing and they've got, they're awesome and they're in a system, which I'm like EOS, and they're managing it, is there any chance that those six people are not going to get us $50 million of real estate? No, of course they will. And the great thing is, if we buy $50 million of real estate, guess what? That pays for the people needed to get there.
Yeah.
So we did that. We set a goal, $50 million of real estate in 3 years with that team. I built a team.
You hit it sooner than 3 years.
We hit it within a year. And at the 3 year mark, we had crossed $300 million of real estate.
So incredible.
Because I had the team. And so I said, what's possible? What do I need to get there? And then I let him go. And it worked. It's that simple.
I know we said we were tying up this episode. I have one question that you've just kind of like.
It's going to cost you though. $20.
I know. Yeah. Well, I can give you back some of the check you've already given me.
Okay, good.
Okay. So you talk about putting the right people in the right seats, getting people that are fired up in these individual roles. That's a big like what if though, right? Like,
it is.
How did you find the people
Yep.
that were right for those seats?
Yep.
And how did you know they were right for those seats? And
sure.
This is the last question.
Sure. So I will start by saying it is easier, I know, for me because I have a podcast. That's one of the reasons that the highest dollar per hour value job you can have in real estate is to be the brand. It's the highest dollar. It's to be the architect. It's to be the thing. Because the energy attracts, like your vibe attracts your tribe, right? So like—
Vibe attracts your tribe.
Yeah, your vibe attracts your tribe, right? So the vibe I put out there has gotten me a lot of people. So when we put an ad out a couple weeks ago for a position for an assistant, we had 1,200 people apply. That is unusual.
Did you see my application?
Yes, I did. You know, sorry, man. I quickly weeded that
respond,
one out.
Dude.
No, man, you didn't make the gauntlet. So we call it the gauntlet, actually. So, but I just want to preface that. I know I have privilege there. I know that I'm lucky to have that. You don't need 1,200 applicants. You need 12. That's okay. So you can
also built that.
Like, yeah, but I built that. You can, and that's why I think people should build social media followings, and they should build that. I think that is a very helpful tool. It's not the only tool. It's not required. It is incredibly powerful. So, that said. To find good people, a couple thoughts on that. Number one, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. I love that phrase. It comes from the book or the movie Minority Report with Tom Cruise, right? Tom Cruise? Yeah, Tom Cruise, Minority Report. In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. So when I say that, I mean if you have done three deals, five deals, six deals, I mean technically one deal, you are a king to the 99% of people out there watching like that want to get into real estate but have not taken any action. So don't think, oh, I'm not Brandon Turner, so I can't do this, right? I'm not Noah, I can't do this. Yeah, you can. You are a god to a lot of people out there. So first of all, just get rid of that limiting belief that you're not me, therefore you can't attract people. Mm-hmm. You can attract everybody who's less than what you've done. So the second thing is you never know how somebody's going to be until you actually work with them. So find ways to work with them. Could be a JV, could be wholesale stuff. We do internships. We love internships. In fact, my COO came from an internship. My investor relations head came from an internship. My lead acquisitions guy came from an internship. My finance guy came from an internship. They all, almost my entire team came through internships. But even that, to get an internship, you have to go through a process and like, we'll be like, you know, the 1,200 people, we asked all of them, like, submit a video explaining why you fit our core values.
I love that.
Right?
Yeah.
How many of you think did it out of the 1,200 actually submitted a video?
10.
Yeah, it was like 300. But it was like just by doing level one, by submitting a simple video with your phone, you're automatically in the top 20%. Then we're like, okay, test number two, write a one-page PDF that explains what you do in this scenario. Out of them, what, 50 people did it? So like
you filter them down.
Yeah, you filter them down very fast.
Easy things. Yeah,
easy things. It filters them down. There's still a lot, right? So what we'll do now, we have to do like, we'll do like six tests in a row. And so does Google, so does Facebook. The big companies that can hire a lot, they'll do a lot of those tests. You can just do a few and get down to five, six, seven. Get on the phone with them. At that point, I mean, if they've gone through all of that, and as long as they don't have any crazy red flags, at that point, it kind of comes down to just culture fit and personality. Yeah. You just, like, okay, I really got a vibe with that person. It felt right. Let's give them an internship. Let's try it. Let's work together on a deal. Let's do a JV together and see how things go. And then you start to get a feel that this is the guy or this isn't the guy, and that's okay. we'll find the next one.
Love that, man.
Yeah.
Well, how do people, how can people get a hold of you if they want to invest with Open Door Capital? How can they reach out to you if they have questions about real estate? What does that look like?
Yeah, they can. Next question. I'm just kidding.
I'll just put your address in the show notes.
Yes,
below.
put my address in front of them right there.
You can door knock.
Yeah, come on my house. Yeah, no, Open Door Capital is odcfund.com. We put the fun in fund.
Woo!
That's not our slogan, but it should be. Anyway, so we put the fun in fund, odcfund.com, and then I'm Beardy Brandon, Beard with the Y at the end, Beardy Brandon on all social networks, including TikTok, where you'll watch me dance and point to things. I don't, but I am on TikTok, but I don't dance.
Brother. Well, dude, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was super fun episode. I feel like you dropped some amazing pieces of knowledge that I hope people realize that knowledge itself is not power. It's the implementation of the knowledge that Brandon just gave us that could actually change your business and change the trajectory that you're on for financial freedom. So thank you guys. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for coming on the show, brother. Appreciate that.
Thank you for having me. Now give me my check back.
Okay. All right. Thanks for tuning into this week's episode, you guys. For more awesome real estate content, you can check out my Instagram. It's just NoahEvans_real estate. It'll also be in the show notes. If you want to reach out to the guest, their contact information and websites and however else to get a hold of them will also be in the show notes. All of our podcast episodes get thrown up to YouTube. And for more awesome exclusive content, please go check out the website. We'll have that link in the show notes below as well. All right. Peace.